This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There's a YouTube video that's still up. It's still public. It was posted on the official American Idol account 13 years ago. It's a short clip, a couple of minutes. It's a kind of quick profile piece that the show does on contestants before they audition. You've probably seen them. This one is a young worship pastor from a small town in Minnesota. He stands in front of the camera and talks about his life, talks about his music, talks about God, and he talks about his wife. I absolutely love the Lord, he says. I love my wife more than anything. She is very, very pretty. I love her. That's what's in the clip. Smiles when he says that. He's nervous and earnest and seems completely genuine, and maybe 13 years ago he was. He says music is all he knows. He says his wife nudged him to audition for American Idol. He compares her, of all people, to Carrie Underwood. He says he's just a normal person who loves to sing more than anything in the world, and he thinks he has a different sound to his voice. That man is Caleb Flynn. And that video, recorded when he was in his mid-20s, full of faith and ambition and what appears to be genuine love for the woman standing behind him, has become one of the most unsettling artifacts of the entire case, because the man who looked into a camera and called his wife very, very pretty is now charged with shooting her twice in the head while their daughter slept down the hall. Little difference in what might have been going on in that world. The comment section on that video has become something else entirely. People go back and watch it now for the audition. Before the performance, trying to read the face of a man who, according to prosecutors, allegedly killed the woman he publicly adored. It's become a digital crime scene of its own. And whether you think you can see something in those old eyes or not, whether you watch that 2-minute clip and think, you spot a tell, probably says more about you than it does about him. I mean, it's 13 years ago. Did you know what you were going to be doing 13 years into the future? Could you predict anything about your future 13 years down the road other than some very basic things? I don't know that anyone was predicting most people. I mean, we're talking, you know, look at some very well-established killers out there. I think most of them could predict 13 years down the road saying, oh yeah, here's what I'm going to be like. So I take that video with very much a grain of sand. By the way, this is part two in our series about the case against Caleb Flynn, American monster, as we're calling it. Or is he? I mean, innocent until proven guilty. So your thoughts in the comments section as we continue to work through this. 4 parts in this series this week. We're going to get you up to speed on what's going on in this case as the trial looms literally just a handful of days away. The question this episode is really about isn't whether the 2-minute clip from 2013 contains clues. It's a lot bigger than that. It's the question that sits at the center of every case like this. Who was this person, actually? Not on camera, not on stage, not on LinkedIn, but in the life behind the image. And maybe you know him. Maybe you've been around this family. Maybe you have some insight. Share it with us on Substack and YouTube in the comment section. So those links, by the way, are in the description. Caleb Flynn was born in Bram, Minnesota, a town of about roughly 2,000 people, roughly an hour north of Minneapolis. His father was a pastor. Music was the family language. And according to a 2013 profile in a local Minnesota newspaper, Caleb started making noise in his parents' church practically as a toddler, always gravitating towards the piano or the drums. And by the time he was 10, he was his father's drummer in the family's traveling praise band. It's like the Partridge Family. His dad later recalled that he knew there was something in Caleb when the boy was 6 years old, performing in a church Christmas program. A little kid in a shepherd costume carrying a tambourine. And people in the congregation were weeping. He was more than a musician, though. Caleb played guard on back-to-back state championship basketball teams in high school. He was an athlete. He was a performer. And from a very young age, he was someone who understood how to connect with an audience, whether that audience was a church pew or a basketball arena or eventually a television screen. I think we need to understand the word here. It's called performance. He knew how to perform. And the evidence here is in many different ways. After high school, he went to Lee University in Cleveland, Tennessee, a private Christian university, to study pastoral and music ministry. That's where he met Ashley. She was from Ohio, from Tip City specifically, and she graduated a semester before him. She moved back home near her family, and he followed. And then he built a career around the thing he'd been doing since he was a child, leading people in worship through music. His first major role was at the worship, or as the worship arts pastor at Living Word Church in Vandalia, Ohio. And I'm sure I destroyed the name of your town. He was there from 2010 to 2015, leading worship for the congregation of about 1,500 people. Then he moved the family to Spartanburg, South Carolina, where he served as worship director at Free Chapel from 2015 to 21, 6 years in South Carolina, leading another church community, building another life. Then something shifted. In early 2021, according to his LinkedIn profile, Caleb left worship leadership entirely, took a job at Equus Financial, a life and annuities insurance company. He was there for less than a year, January to November of 21. It's a jarring line on a resume that up to that point reads like a straight trajectory through ministry and music. 1 year selling insurance, and then moved into something else entirely. VP of sales at Richard D. Smith & Sons, a Tip City-based commercial flooring company and interior supplier for worship spaces. The company was owned and operated by Ashley's family. He was, in effect, working for his in-laws, a not uncommon arrangement in small-town family businesses, but one that placed him inside Ashley's family's economic orbit in a way that the worship ministry roles really never had. His professional identity, his income, his daily work life, all of it now flowed through his wife's family's company. It's worth sitting in that for a moment. After more than a decade leading worship for churches across two states, Caleb Flynn's career arc brought him into his wife's family business selling commercial flooring. His LinkedIn profile, which as of this reporting still features a photo of him performing on American Idol, maps a trajectory that went from stadiums of praise to sales offices, from audience of hundreds or thousands to presumably clients and invoices and flooring samples. It's not a judgment. Career changes happen. Police pivot, or people pivot, for all kinds of reasons. But the distance between the man who told American Idol cameras that music was all he knew and the man working in his in-law's flooring business is part of the story, because here's what emerged after his arrest. Ashley's family retained an attorney and went to court. They filed documents seeking information on the couple's finances. And what those filings revealed added a new dimension to everything. According to court documents, Caleb Flynn was listed as the primary beneficiary. Oh, here we go. On a life insurance policy on Ashley's life. The family's filing asked for information on bank accounts, retirement accounts, real estate, cars, and other financial records. And the language in that filing was pointed. Caleb, they said, has the motive, opportunity, and means to dissipate those assets, to transfer them to third parties, or otherwise place them beyond the reach of the children and the estate. Motive, opportunity, and means. Those are the exact words filed in court by the family of the woman he is accused of killing, about the man who was supposed to be their son-in-law. Now, let's just say this, you know, because look, if you're in a relationship, if you're married, if you're in a, say, long-term relationship with somebody, it's not crazy to have a life insurance policy on yourself or on them should anything happen, especially if, you know, that would impact your means to continue living your life. If something, God forbid, horrible were to happen to them. That's what I always point to in these cases, because it's the easy one to go to. Was there a life insurance policy? Yes, but I mean, come on. I mean, the odds of life insurance policies on most couples of any period of time that are remotely responsible human beings is pretty damn high. Just because it exists doesn't mean that, well, that's going to be the motive. So I'm just going to throw that out there. Does it exist? Yes. Is it a motive? Is it odd? Is it something that's super suspicious? I guess no more suspicious than, and they had a refrigerator. A refrigerator that could possibly block a door. Yeah, there's a fridge, and it did block a door. But it also doesn't necessarily point well in advance to some sort of murderous activity. In context, when it makes sense, and there's a fridge blocking the door you said the intruder came through, then it becomes part of the story. Just the refrigerator existing in the garage without that context, not so much. The family also asked the court to issue a domestic violence temporary protection order to prevent Caleb from withdrawing funds from the couple's financial accounts beyond necessary living expenses. They wanted a wall around those assets for the children. And here's the legal context that makes this all matter. Under Ohio's Slayer statute, if Caleb Flynn is convicted of Ashley's murder, he would be legally ineligible to receive any proceeds from the life insurance policies that list him as beneficiary. Those funds would instead go directly to the children. The statute also applies to inheritance under wills, trusts, and other financial instruments. It exists because the law recognizes something that common sense already tells you. You shouldn't be able to profit from killing someone. And depending on the insurance policy, quite honestly, there might be no payout at all, especially if you made it happen. The court granted the motion to share financial documents obtained during the investigation with the children's guardians. The guardian's attorney also inserted themselves into the defense's motion to seal case documents, making clear that the family intended to be an active presence in the legal proceedings, not just the criminal case, but the financial and custodial battles that are surrounding it, because you can bet there's a lot more court cases going on here than just the trial for murder. And then there's, of course, the American Idol connection, which in the media's hands became the defining label for this case. Former American Idol contestant charged with wife's murder. It's in every headline. It's not irrelevant, but it's also not the whole story. It's also like, for 2 seconds here, I want to say this. If your entire existence is defined by your one episode or two episode appearance on American Idol 13 years ago, you got other problems. If that's like crescendo in life, and this is, I mean, yes, it's notable to the public, I guess, but if that's what you're trading on as your relevance to existence, it's kind of sad. Caleb auditioned for season 12 of American Idol in 2013. He sent a video of himself singing Lean On Me on the last day video auditions were accepted. A producer called him. He flew to Chicago. He auditioned. He got the golden ticket to Hollywood. He filmed the Road to Hollywood interview where he talked about Ashley, about God, about music. And then he was cut before the television rounds. I mean, it's pretty quick. He wasn't like he was like a big long-term contestant. He had a, you know, really we're talking probably less than 10 minutes of television time in total. He never appeared on the main show. He was a footnote, a guy who almost made it, who got close enough to stand on the stage, but not close enough to stay. He'd actually tried out once before, according to his Idol interview, and didn't make it. Past the first auditions, a second time with a video audition of Lean On Me. He broke through, but only so far. Hollywood was as far as it went. So that footage, because it's rather unspectacular, sat on YouTube for over a decade. And then in February 26, it became the most watched thing on the American Idol channel. Not because of his voice, but because of what he said about his wife. Meanwhile, back in Tip City, Caleb and Ashley had built what looked from the outside like a deeply rooted life. Both served at Christian Life Center in Butler Township. He has a worship pastor. She is a member and volunteer. She taught Bible lessons at Lifewise Academy. Their daughters played in the yard. Their neighbors had nothing but good things to say about them. The public image was fairly seamless. But the arraignment shattered that image in a way that was almost theatrical in its precision. Because on March 19th, Caleb appeared in Miami County Common Pleas Court for his arraignment on the expanded indictment, now 11 counts, including aggravated murder. He was shackled at his hands and feet, but a dozen of Ashley's family members sat in the gallery directly behind the prosecutor. Judge Stacey Wohl increased his bond from $2 million to $3.5 million, citing the severity of the aggravated murder charge, and the court issued a no-contact order. Caleb Flynn was barred from any interaction with his own daughters. The man who told his first judge, "I just want to take care of my daughters," was now legally prohibited from speaking to them, from calling them, from being in the same room. The father who on body cam told his mother, "The girls don't know," was now in a position where he couldn't tell them anything at all. His attorney, L. Patrick Mulligan, entered a not guilty plea on all counts. In an earlier statement, Mulligan had said he questioned the thoroughness of the investigation and objected to the high bond, arguing it denied Caleb the opportunity to attend his wife's funeral, which he called an unspeakable tragedy. There's a version of Caleb Flynn that exists on the internet forever, a young man with a guitar standing on a stage talking about how much he loves his wife and his God and his music. There's another version of the Miami County Jail, shackled, indicted on 11 counts, cut off from his children, his bond set at $3.5 million, facing the possibility of life without parole. This episode doesn't resolve the tension between those two versions. That's not its job. The trial will decide which version the evidence supports. What we're doing here is mapping the distance between the man the world saw and the man the prosecution describes, and asks you to sit in that distance without rushing to fill it. Because somewhere in that gap is the truth about what happened at 932 Cunningham Court. And the next part of this story isn't about the man accused, it's about the woman who was lost. Her name is Ashley. And she deserves more than just being a case file. That's coming up next. Press subscribe so you don't miss part 3 in our series as we get you prepared for the trial of Caleb Flynn. Here in the coming weeks, we'll be covering it for you. This is your appetizer, if you will. So you can be fully up to date. Is he an American monster? Or did something else truly happen in that house that night? Moving a fridge isn't an impossibility. Or the way it was positioned, is it? We'll get into all that. Press subscribe wherever you get podcasts so you don't miss any of it. We'll continue our conversation in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Don't you wish everything was more rewarding? With Rakuten, almost everything is. You can earn cash back on those new shoes you've been wanting. You can save on the next trip you book. You can cash in on groceries. Just join, shop your favorite brands, and save. Target, Instacart, Expedia, Macy's, Sephora, CVS, the list is long. Save online, in-store, and at over 22,000 restaurants. And when it's time to redeem those rewards, get your money exactly how you want it. Choose PayPal, check, Bilt points, or cash out with gift cards. Eligible American Express card members can choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. Terms and conditions apply. So go ahead, take a trip, fill a cart, order dessert. Rakuten is a world of rewards. Join today for free. Go to Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.
From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U.
Did you say someone got shot?
November 2006, a college football star on his way to NFL dreams. Gunned down in broad daylight.
His bone crying, and he said, "Coach, they killed him."
No weapon, missing witnesses, conflicting accounts, and for years, no arrest.
She insinuated that the Miami PD had done nothing, and it became a little bit more accusatory.
The case goes cold, rumors spread, and the truth gets buried until now.
His world could come crashing down. According to him, it was over.
The ending, something no one saw coming, because this story isn't over yet. From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U. Binge the full season right now, wherever you get your podcasts.